KSDR welcomes you to this week's edition of On the Water and in the Air. It's not always about where the fish are biting or where the birds are flying. It's talk about how to go get them.
On the Water and in the Air with your hosts Neil Jensen, Randy Aggermeyer, and Lynn Jurens.
Well, we're back for another round. We got Lynn's mic facing the right way, away
Three
from
weeks
his mouth.
In a row, they can't hear me.
Lynn? Huh? I tell you what, the weathermen to this week are all in a lather.
I know it. There's a 90% chance we're going to get more than 4 inches.
I love it. You know, in the fall when they 4 inches, shut it down, we're going to get 4 to 6 inches.
Yeah.
Now as the year goes on, we get numb. Now they're talking 2 to 3 foot, and it's going to be 4 inches.
I can't wait for the love affair.
Oh, it's a snowpocalypse. My wife is ready. Get the gas in the generator. Get the groceries. Get the booze. Yep.
That snowblower and I. That little $200 snowblower and I have had a love affair.
Oh,
we used it 45 minutes yesterday morning just to get ready for this weekend.
Wow.
She's nice. I like her.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Better like her some more.
Yeah, better love her. I'm sick of pushing and blowing snow, but what do you do? We live up here. It's about over.
Start walking and driving right over the top of it.
That's right. And, you know, I was out on the lake the other day, and with the four-wheeler, you can drive over most of it right now.
Oh, can you really?
Yeah, I was able to get around pretty decent.
That's interesting. Well, this is going to be a really good chat. Already a couple people have asked, hey, ask Brian about the area lakes as far as anyone had some reports. What do we think? What are we guessing? As we know, sometimes we think they die out and all of a sudden there's all kinds of life in them.
Who are we talking about? For those listening?
We're going to talk to Brian Blackwell.
There you go.
You know, having him right here in the studio, I forgot to mention that we have Brian Blackwell with us. Fantastic. Just over the years, ton of respect for this man with what he's
absolutely
fish what whisperer. He's done for Northeast. Yeah, for what he's done to take a few of the perch out of the lake and teach us how to fish them. No, he does a lot of that also. So that's another thing that, you know, he takes his kids out. Yeah. He goes out. He's an outdoorsman himself first and then work a second, right?
Yep, definitely.
Good morning, Brian Blackwell.
Good morning.
I mean, there's a lot of questions with wildlife this time of the year, but really the number one thing is how are the fish handling it under this 2 feet of snow?
You know, yeah, we've had ice or snow on top of our ice for a long time, basically since the first of the year. So there's no doubt a lot of our lakes are probably stressed, those that are what we consider marginal, those shallow ones. People aren't getting to those lakes, so we're not hearing anything about them. You typically, at this time of year, if there's a fish kill, somebody will drill a hole and the water smells and looks kind of murky and stuff. But so far, you know, we're not getting those reports from any of our lakes really in the Northeast. You go south here, the Oakwoods and that area, they're starting to see some dead fish, and they've had some dead reports of dead fish. Up in our area, other than the Third Avenue Pond here in town, I think that's the only one we've heard of a report of dead fish on so far.
Oh, really? The Lions Park Pond
right.
on Third Avenue?
Yeah, somebody had a camera down and said they saw a trout laying all over down on the bottom, so that were dead, which doesn't surprise us. You know, it's not that deep, and so typically, and we restock that twice a year, so those fish are
the Northerns are eating well.
They should if there's any in there, yeah.
Northerns don't die.
You know, that's the one thing. Northern pike and yellow perch, they've evolved in this country to take low DO, dissolved oxygen levels, so a lot of times they don't die. And there, a few may die and not a complete kill. Mm-hmm. When we start talking about winter kill, you know, as a fisheries biologist, we would like to rather have a complete kill instead of a partial kill on a lake. Because a lot of times if you have a partial kill, it takes the game fish, the ones we're managing for, out and leaves the bullheads and the common carp and stuff like that. So if we're going to have a kill, we want that thing to be a good kill and kill everything. And, you know, when you look back at winter kill lakes that we've had in the area, typically within a year to 2 years, the fishing is phenomenal on those waters. We get in there and we put pre-spawn adult perch in them, and usually if we know it killed, then so they'll reproduce typically that first year. We stock it with walleyes, and after a winter kill, you know, the system kind of resets and the growth rates of those fish is incredible, so we can provide a fishery in a relatively short time a lot of times on those winter kill lakes. So, you know, everybody thinks winter kill is a real bad thing. Yeah, it is when we see big walleyes or whatever laying dead. But generally, it's Mother Nature just resetting that system, and we can take advantage of it and have good fishing short time.
Well, in the case of pelican, Compesca is its feeder in the Big Sioux River. So that thing loads right back up.
Right.
Right now, pelican has some really dandy fish in.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And haven't really heard, and again, because we didn't get that heavy snow till January, you kind of hope that a lake like Pelican will take it.
Yeah, sure. We sure hope so. And, you know, that's the thing. If people see dead fish in the spring, once we do have ice out, let us know. Some of these we have, you know, inkling that they may have killed. We'll be in there netting them just to check right away in the spring if we, you know, as things go on. So hopefully, you know, between what we find, what people tell us, we can get fish restocked in some of these that winter kill and keep providing fishery on those waters.
Well, that brings me to one of my questions. Some of these little lakes never were intended to have fish in them, and now they do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know if Casey's is one of them, but maybe a Mankey's or some of these little. Is there a plan to restock them if they die, or are they just going to let them go?
You know, that's going to depend on what water body. With this whole non-meandered water stuff now, we're not going to be stocking as quickly on some of these. You know, the Section 8 lakes, those that are open, and potentially others that we may have agreements on, yeah, we would stock them. But if the access isn't going to be that great to get to them, and we can't, you know, secure some access, we're probably going to avoid them. A lot of the lakes, though, we did not stock. It was Mother Nature got the fish there on its own over the years. Right. And,
or
you know,
a friend of a friend.
Right.
And then,
you know,
Mother Nature's.
Right. Yeah. And that'll likely happen again, especially if, you know, we get into a wet period where we have lots of runoff, you know, for several years and water starts moving again. Those fish will move around on their own. So
yeah, good. That's a good answer. That's kind of what I wondered. I knew there was some implications with the non-meandered waters.
Right.
We were told if those lakes are shut down, you guys aren't going to be real.
Right. Yeah. We won't. Yeah. If they're shut down, there's no public access. We won't be doing anything in them.
That means you don't have access to.
Right.
And that's okay. That's the way the law is written. I'm good with that. What else do we have for Brian?
We have Louis Valence listening in from out on Lake Oahe.
Louis's worried about a Oahe fish killing. What do you do if a Oahe fish kills?
Then we're all in trouble.
If we do that, it's because they usually flush the thing.
You know, isn't that? You know, I saw a number yesterday on from an email with Target Walleye. I know there's a way of putting an economic value on fishing, but North Dakota just came out with a number. They figured 2018, 2.1 with a B billion was part of the economic engine that fueled North Dakota last year. And this is big. I mean, Oahe's big, Northeast, South Dakota's
big. Yeah. There is no doubt. I don't, you know, there was a couple of years ago, there was a number, and I don't even have that number right offhand, but there's no doubt economics that our wildlife and fisheries populations provide South Dakota is huge. And it's definitely a big part of why we all live here and why people want to come here and participate in it.
Well, we advertise the pheasant. And, you know, the three of us have done, and we understand the fun of that, and it's part of our heritage. But and that brings some good cash for a few weekends. But after those three or four weekends to start out the pheasant season, it's all about the fishing.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Yep, fishing is a big driver. You know, as far as our agency, the small game licenses is our driver. So the pheasants are our driver as far as funding. But, you know, we look at the long-term sales of fishing licenses as well, and they're a huge contributor. And we're kind of different than a lot of, you know, states in the fact that we haven't seen a huge decrease in the number of people fishing. You know, last year was a little bit of a drop or so far this year. But over the long haul, we've been pretty consistent as far as the number of people buying fishing license, which is, I think, speaks highly to what the quality of the fishing we've had in this area.
Did I see a little downturn, or remember hearing in the media there was a downturn last year in fishing?
Yeah, I think I don't remember how much, but there was a little bit of one. And so far, I think this winter, it's been kind of slow. And I think that's just the weather. People
this
aren't
is
getting
weather
out.
Now.
They aren't getting out there yet. So this hopefully, like, I haven't even bought a fishing license yet, so I haven't been out. So
you know, there's
the blasphemy.
There is, there's factors to that, and it's not just weather. I mean, I hope that people understand that when they see a little bit in the news about non-meandered waters, that, you know, 90 8% of our water that we had 10 years ago is still fishable.
Right.
Well, should be fishable. I think the reason the number's down is because the lake levels. Some of these lake levels are way down. It non-meandered waters was a huge issue, and it's come and gone, and it make a big impact on where we can fish. But not having access in some of these because of the low water is probably keeping more people away than non-meandered waters ever thought about.
Right.
And then, you know, evolving the two, what I call the two big lakes north of us, Bitter and Mauve, those are starting to evolve back where, remember we were talking 4 or 5 years ago, Bitter was in a sad state of mind.
Yep.
And now that thing is starting
it's,
to churn.
You know, that's our go-to lake right now this winter. It has been, and that's primarily because people are plowing some roads out there so people can get on it. But, you know, the fish population looks good in there. We have a huge year class of perch coming. I'm guessing next winter they should be of a size people are willing to catch.
Really?
Yeah.
That's good news. That's been a while since we've felt like Bitter is a viable option for perch fishing.
Right, and they should be there next, if growth rates continue, they should be good next winter. And walleye population still looks pretty good. There's a big year class coming as well. But, you know, we have, you know, scattering of fish all throughout, all pretty much all lengths, and they're healthy fish again. Pulling that length limit benefited us tremendously, I think, as well as some food got in that lake. So that definitely helped, and things look definitely better on that lake right now.
We got a question from a guy that says, will we have access to the PSAs, WPAs that are landlocked?
What is PSA standing for?
Waterfowl Production Area is a WPA. So a WPA, meaning it must be...
like public grounds, public water, like deep lake maybe.
Yeah, if they're landlocked, you know, that's where Rhett Russell comes in. He can negotiate with private landowners to try to get land or access to some of those. We're doing
right
that.
Now, there's no guarantee on
There's no guarantee on that. If it's across the WPA, you know, we try to negotiate with the feds on some of those deals where he can get some access on them. It just depends. You know, each one is treated separately, so there's no guarantee you'll be able to drive a rig across them. If it's public land, you can always walk across it to get to it. So.
Yeah, well, that's what – walk to the north end of Long Lake. Can't drive anywhere up there, but it's great to fish.
So before we end this segment today, I am going to ask, you know, Brian does do a lot of fishing, and we are going to ask, you know, where his favorite spot's going to be. We'll let him think about that yet for 5 years. Where are his go-to spots come spring and summer this year?
I have a question for you. I'm going to knock you a little bit back on your heels. You hear every year that they're going to think about opening up that north end of Long Lake for boating. Is there any truth to this? Is it just fisherman rumor?
You know, it's been proposed to the commission, and then I believe that would have been, I think last June it was proposed, and then it got tabled because it was all intermixed with a bunch of other lakes that
they
were trying
to
open. But yeah, they're still moving, hopefully moving that direction. It just makes more sense that north end is the deep end. It's probably going to be the better fishing throughout most of the summer. So hopefully they will get that open. You know, it's in the commission. I don't know if that proposal is still moving forward right now, but we're definitely trying to get
open. Is this the Long Lake by
Henry?
Really?
By Henry.
Long Lake by Henry. Okay.
You know, you can't fish the north end of that. And as a guy who lives in Henry and that's my back door, I hate to see it opened up, but I understand it should be.
Yeah. Well, at least he's admitting that there's a little greed in every one of us.
You know, I go sit in that lake, and nobody bothers me all summer long. Very rarely do people come out to that south end.
Yeah, it'll definitely change if we
Sorry,
get some
I haven't
access.
Kept a good eye on the feed this morning, but Souter's on. How do we get the perch population established again in Lake Thompson?
Stop fishing, Souter.
Yeah.
You know, the one everybody's upset with all the snow we got, but that is the one thing that's going to help our perch populations across this region. If we get some runoff this spring, we tend to have good perch reproduction. And then you have that flooded littoral zone where they have some places, the nursery habitat. And if the wind doesn't blow a whole lot this spring, we should have good perch reproduction. And hopefully we'll see, you know, perch in a lot of these lakes that have been down in the last few years.
Is that because the weeds and cattails are where they really want to spawn, and that's
right. Yep,
they
drape their eggs up over a lot of terrestrial stuff, whether it be trees or vegetation that's in the water. And then usually when that water increases, you just have a good nutrient surge in that lake, and so the productivity goes up, and that's when we tend to see better perch reproduction. We haven't had runoff for several years.
I know.
You look at, if you look at a correlation between our perch abundance and our runoff, they're pretty well tight.
I did look at that. I think the last time we had any measurable runoff was probably 2010.
Yep, probably that 2010-11.
We're going to get some runoff, people.
Yeah, there's
no doubt.
We're
going to get some runoff.
It's going to be running off into the basements. And into
yeah.
They're going to be in your basement. We're going to have perch spawning in your basement.
Yeah, but I think we don't like this snow, and it's tough on the ice, and it may be hurting, but we need this. We needed this winter badly for fishing.
Definitely go recharge our lakes.
Yeah, absolutely. And I like having the fact we're going to see a perch explosion in a couple of years because it
happens. Sure, hope it happens.
To get to
that 10-inch mark, which is where we like to start keeping a perch here and there for the frying pan. What's that, about a 2-year process?
Right, it takes about two years. When it's a good growth rates, those fish will reach 10 inches in about two and a half years.
Sorry to our friends from northern Minnesota. I think it takes you 10 years to get a 10-inch perch.
Actually, with all them fishermen there, they don't get a 10-inch perch. They're nailed at 9.
Well, the growth rates are so slow because there's just so many of them.
Right. And we have that in our lakes too, like Enemy Swim. They're real slow growing. Some lakes, they just are slow growing, and they basically provide food for other predators instead of a sport fish for people.
And I'm going to switch gears on you completely here. I've gotten into something this last few years about fishing bluegill. I just love them big bulls.
Okay. I'm glad you asked that. I am starting a project this summer where we're going to start looking at bluegill exploitation on a few of our lakes. Enemy Swim is the one we're going to start on this year. But bluegill are a really neat fish because a lot depends on the male. Mm-hmm. The life history strategies all depend on the male. They have what's called parental males. And they're the fish that get big, the bulls that you want. Yeah, they're hard to replace. Yep. And once you over-harvest those big males, the smaller males, they either do one of two things. They reach sexual maturity younger, and then they quit devoting energy to growth, and so they're reproducing. Or you have what's called sneakers or mimics. They're small bluegills. They don't mature to a big size like the parental males, and they start reproducing at a small size. And they're called a sneaker because they'll see the big blue, the male on a nest spawning with a female, but they'll sneak in and do their thing with that female so that their genes pass on versus the big male's genes.
Oh.
And the mimic's a similar thing, but the mimic looks like a female, and it's actually a male, and he gets in there when the male and the female are in there, and he's reproducing as well. So we're looking into that. We don't know what kind of exploitation we have on our bluegills in a lot of our lakes, and we need to find that out so we can partition what mortality is in there and see what's going on with our bluegills. Hopefully we can figure out a way to keep big bluegills on the landscape because more and more, like you said, people are interested in these big bluegills, and that's the direction we're hoping to go with this research.
I listened to Dennis Kasubi here a couple years ago, and he's a big bluegill fisherman. He told me it takes 25 years to get the big bulls going.
Okay.
And once they're gone, they're gone.
Right. Replacing them takes a long time.
Yeah. So don't save them big things. Look at them, like them, and put them back.
I grew up fishing Lake Cochrane. The sneakers must have got in there.
Gone
lake. I never caught a keeper bluegill. The crappies are nice, but I don't. And I haven't fished it now for a long time. Any other questions coming in yet? Well, Brian, you are the guy with the statistics for Northeast South Dakota. I love looking at your graphs on, your studies on each lake. Where are the hot spots this summer?
As far as walleyes go, it's going to be those lakes in Clark counties again. When you look at our surveys from last year, the Dry Number 2, Indian Springs, those are by far, the best quality walleye populations we have right now. Whether those fish will bite is another thing. Last year was plenty of food in them. The bite was tough. Bitter and Wabe are going to be big draws again this year. And Reitz. I think Reitz is going to see a fair amount of activity now that it's open again. This goes open again on May 1st.
For one walleye over 20 inches?
Then? One over 28. It's basically, 28. If you go to Reitz, if you go to Reitz, just expect to catch and release everything you catch. So for the smallmouth bass, that follows just a statewide regulation.
Yeah.
But I think Reitz will definitely, it pulled a few people, quite a few last year when it reopened finally at the end.
Yeah.
But I think come May 1st, that lake's going to be busy. So I think that'll definitely be one that a lot of people are going to.
Absolutely.
Thank you to Jamie Reitz's family for working with the Game Fish and Parks, crappie,
you know, there's,
that lake.
There's they're not abundant as they once were, but there's still crappie in there. There's a scattering of bluegills. The perch numbers are down, but hopefully they'll start coming back with some runoff this spring. So, yeah, walleye and smallmouth are the big draws right there on that lake right now.
It's a good deal. Hey, before we go.
If
you have cabin fever this weekend, you should get down to the Sioux Empire Sports Show. Shane Kendall from Great Lakes Marine just posted something, said come down and visit him.
Yes.
So yeah, you're sick of
if you get down there, you could get stuck.
You could get stuck.
You could watch some Summit League basketball for the next four days. You could go to the sports show.
If you get stuck, the sports show is a great place to be stuck.
Yes. And then at night, you can go over and watch the Jacks beat up on USD. Oh, wait.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, wait. Yes.
No,
yes,
beat up on North Dakota State. Let's just.
So say hello to Shane Kendall and all the boys down there. That should be a good show. Hope everybody. He has fun.
Well, Brian, thank you.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always great to talk. So
yeah, we get to talk a little longer than just your little fishing part. You know, that's not enough. We got to teach him how to catch the fish.
And now we have a guy giving a fishing report who hasn't bought a license this year. So I say I don't buy it.
It's everybody just been too tough. I haven't been out, so
you guys don't need licenses this year. Just go.
No, it's you gotta have it. I will be buying mine soon.
I haven't bought one either, Brian. I'm on the same. And I've told everybody, hey, get your fishing license last week of January. and buy it before you forget it. I've tried that before.
Fear,
in North Dakota, I didn't do it in South Dakota. I did it in North Dakota one time.
It used to be though. North Dakota's always been a little bit ahead of us. You can buy a license on the water, and you're usually okay.
You can.
Because I forgot that.
I was on my phone trying to buy one.
Now South Dakota's that way, too. You should be able to call in and say, I need a license. I'm fishing. Okay.
All right. We're going to send this baby over to news. Top of the hour news.